What does it mean when someone disappears without trace, leaving no clue as to their whereabouts? Every day we read of kidnappings, abductions, or disappearances in places like El Salvador and other countries in South America. But people disappear in places far closer to home. Recently we had the kidnapping of Ben Dunn, and some years ago the long-drawn-out Herrema affair. In Northern Ireland, the most publicised disappearance was the kidnapping of German businessman Thomas Niedermayer nearly 10 years ago. What isn't as well known is that the tiny village of Cross Maglen in South Armagh is today shaken by the disappearance of three of its menfolk. For the families of the missing men, the wait for their return has been a very long wait. Local politician Paddy O'Hanlon has been trying to bring their heartbreak to the attention of the public.
Jerry Evans has been missing for some years now. The circumstances surrounding his disappearance are as mysterious, if not more mysterious, than the rest. Inasmuch as he was thumbing out a lonely road, seen thumbing out a lonely road, and in the aftermath of that, was never seen again. Quiet fella, exceptional attributes, no record of involvement, no record whatsoever of any activity that would lead one to believe that exceptional circumstances in his case existed for his disappearance.
What more can I say only that he went away about 1:45 on Sunday, the 25th of March, 79, for to go to his pals. They used to go down to Blaney in the afternoon, and he didn't go to the dance. He was supposed to be seen looking a lift home at about 11 o'clock at the corner in Castle Blaney. And he hasn't been seen since. We never got no word from him. And we appealed to everybody, the guards and the police and the television and all. But no one came forward to say that they lifted him or anything. So we just don't know what happened to him, because he wasn't a fella that would go away without telling us. He was awful fond of, you know, his home and the rest of the children. So it wasn't like him to do that. So I don't know what to think. And we watched every day the post to see whether there'd be a letter or a phone call or somebody come and tell us. But no one came forward. So we're still waiting and hoping.
Charlie Armstrong, the second disappearance, last August, I believe it was, was an extremely well-respected man in the local community, quiet man, kept himself to himself. The family are held in high regard in the area, just like the families of the other people who disappear. In his case, his car was found in Dundalk. He'd set out on a journey. The car was found, but no sign of Charlie himself. Once again, no question of involvement, no question of exceptional circumstances existing whereby he should suddenly mysteriously disappear. Once again, absolutely no sign of what happened to him, no information as to his whereabouts.
Well, he left the house at 10 o'clock on Sunday the 16th of August to collect a neighbour. He was seen then driving around the town in a sort of a daze. Well, the next day we were doing searches and inquiries by ourselves, the family, and the telephone call came from the guard in Dundalk that they'd found the car at the Delphi Cinema. So when we went out to Dundalk, they had the car in the barracks and were sending it on to Dublin. But their tests come back then to say it was all clear. There was no sign of a struggle or anything in the car. So we concentrated then on Dundalk. People thought they'd seen him, but still not indefinite. So there was a search then organised by the town people. So they covered different areas throughout the north and the south, as far as Drogheda, Downpatrick and Bundoran. So still people thought they'd seen him, but they weren't sure. So we just left it then to the Gardaí.
Sean Murphy, set out to visit his girlfriend who was in hospital in Newry. Once again, absolutely no evidence, no sign of his whereabouts, no indication as to what might have happened to him.
On the 4th of December, he went in to see Anne Grant in the hospital from 2 o'clock, or half past two, I don't know what time the visiting time was at, and he came back home here around four, and he took his dinner, and him and I had a great chat here together, talking about Christmas and about everything, and he even asked me to go with him in to see Anne that evening. He said there was no one going with him, only her mother and her daughter-in-law. And he wanted me to postpone where I was going with my daughter-in-law, which was to the hairdressers. He wanted me to postpone that until one evening the week coming in. And I said, no, I didn't want to let Roma down. And I was even giving him money because he talked about he had a car of his own here, but it wasn't roadworthy. And he had to borrow cars. And he said he was getting his sister's car that night. And I said, why not ask his father for the car when he came back? And that was about 6:15, John told me, when he came back, that Sean asked him for the car. And he didn't know until that, and he left at 6:45. I didn't see him afterwards. Now, it came on till about 12 o'clock. I got a bit panicky about him. I thought maybe he was in a pub. But he wasn't drinking. He would only take a pint or two. And he didn't come home, and it came on to 2 o'clock, and it came on to 3. John went to bed, and so did Eamon, and I didn't go to bed at all, and John came back up here, and we sat until 6:30. And we went to bed, and I got up again at 7. And it was then that we discovered at 8:30 that he hadn't gone to Daisy Hill Hospital in Newry. Mrs. Grant never saw him. It wasn't until then. So we started to make inquiries about it. And we haven't had a clue of where he went to.
Jerry Evans, Charlie Armstrong and Sean Murphy have disappeared without trace from the Cross Maglen area. The theories on what happened to them follow an obvious pattern.
Some of the more popular theories, of course, range across the various groups who carry guns in this community. There's a school of thought that would make a case for the Provisional IRA having lifted them, for the INLA having lifted them, for the British Army having lifted them, for the SAS having lifted them, for the RUC having lifted them, for the RUC Reserve, for the UDR having lifted them. That runs through the gamut, save for the loyalist paramilitaries of various hues who are also accused of lifting them.
Whatever the reasons for these men disappearing, all of them have been reported missing to the RUC. We asked the RUC for their comments, and they provided us with this statement.
Adult persons have the right to disappear if they so choose, and police inquiries are only instigated where there is reason to suspect that the disappearance is not voluntary, and where relatives ask them to intervene. In cases in which the police are involved, the investigations are continuous.
So what did some of the families try to do to find out what happened to their loved ones?
We have gone to a lot of trouble, and our neighbours and friends as well went to a lot of trouble. We went to 2 clairvoyants, one in Dublin, which had a busload of friends and neighbours from the district in Dublin all day and all overnight, tramping the streets. We never got anything there. We went to another man in Kells. He told us a different story altogether. He told us that he was dead and we'd find his body in Dundalk Bay. We got a busload of friends again and neighbours. They went out and searched, along with the Dundalk Gardaí, searched the bay, and on Sunday morning the divers from Newry came out and dived every place that they couldn't walk. Found nothing.
We've tried very hard to get our father back. We've been away nearly every weekend. We first of all go and report it to the guards stations, as some of them haven't heard about it. and we leave photographs and details there. We then go to the parochial house and ask for them to put it in the weekly bulletin. We then do hotels, shops, off license, anything like that. And some hotels there will let you look at the register to see what you notice if it's handwritten or what's in it. Guest houses, bed and breakfast, that sort of thing.
The wife and son of Charlie Armstrong and the lengths they've gone to over the last 5 months. How does local politician Paddy O'Hanlon feel when he meets the Armstrongs and the other families who wait?
When one meets a relative of the missing people, one experiences a sense of failure on one's own part. For instance, I feel that I should be able to give some information to them as to what has happened, the missing person. And one experiences a personal sense of failure that you're not bringing forward information that would help lead to the whereabouts. In the case of a conversation with the families of those who are missing, you just really don't know what to say. I mean, you can't very well say to them, I'm sorry for your trouble, because you don't know if trouble has been visited upon them in the tragic sense of the word. You know that the trouble exists, that the people are missing, that they're suffering, gone through a very harrowing time.
It has a terrible effect on us anyway. We have no Christmas no more, no Christmas tree or anything for the rest of the children. It's very hard to explain to them why that we can't have one, you know. You're just hoping from day to day. But the house is not the same at all. They're always watching at night, you know, with the car or footstep or something like that. Always hoping that somebody will come and tell you that he might come back himself or something. All they can say is terrible waiting. And if you hear tell of anyone being found, well, your heart just stops until you know then it's, you know, it's nothing to do with you. But whoever did do it, if anyone did do it, just let us know where we could find them. That's all. Each time something like this happens in the area, it brings it all back to us again. And we go through the same as we did then in the beginning. And praying that they'll turn up as well. If they did, there was a chance that Jerry'd come back as well. That's all.
It's very hard to say exactly what way a body feels about something like this. You're just waiting all the time for a phone call or a message that maybe somebody has seen him someplace, and but we haven't had any word at all, either by phone or nobody has reported seeing him at any place. So the waiting has been probably the worst and the hardest part of the whole thing.
It's this emotional limbo that gets you all the time. This business that they're in some ways, like the famous paintings of Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel, where he's depicted himself in St. Bartholomew's skin hanging between heaven and hell. And to a large extent, that's the sort of image that comes to my mind when I think of the families of the four men who are missing. My contact with some of those families could be greater now, but because of this sense of failure, that there's no information to give to them, because one doesn't want to rake over old coals more than is necessary, bring back to mind all the circumstances all the time. I haven't been in as close a contact as I might have liked. But really, at the end of the day, it's this business about heaven and hell, this emotional limbo, this oscillation between euphoria, if you like, that maybe the people are alive, and this depression that they're dead must be very emotionally harrowing for all those involved.
Well, it's hell, and you're wondering where he is and if he's alive or dead. And you're wondering if he's cold or hungry. Because I don't think he had any money with him to keep him... Well, he had money, but not enough to keep him going. And wherever he is or whoever knows anything about him, would they let us know?
It was just a headache from morning to night. Every car that pulls up or every strange car I see, I'm constantly looking into them. Anyone stranger comes to the door, or even the army when they pull up at the house, I imagine they have news, but no news of any description. I'm watching the police day and night too. They're no news.
Jerry Evans, Charlie Armstrong and Sean Murphy all disappeared from the Cross Maglen area, which is sometimes referred to as the Murder Triangle or No-Go area. But in a much quieter place altogether, in the town of Newcastle, bordering the Newry Mourne district. Another disappearance, a year ago. 27-year-old Eugene Simons. His father waits and remembers.
Well, first of all, my son was born and reared here in Newcastle, County Down. And he was third of our family. There was 10 of a family. He was 3 boys and 7 girls. He served his time as a plumber and heating engineer, and was well known around the County Down, Castlewell, Newcastle, Kilkeel area in connection with his work. When his wife died, he came to live with us, his parents, in Newcastle, and he came home with 3 of a family, 2 little girls and a boy. The baby was just about 3 to 4 months old. The other little girl was 1.5 years, and the wee boy coming 3. He wasn't very long in our house until it was visited by the UDR and police. He was taken away on a number of occasions for interrogation. It looked to me as if he was the one that they were interested in, for having 2 other sons living in the house, along with myself, my wife, and other members of our family. There was no interest shown and any other members of my family by the security forces. It's a known fact that in August 1980, he was taken to some sort of an interrogation by armed men out of a pub in Dundalk. At that time, he went away on a Sunday, and he didn't return until the early hours of Thursday morning. It's against that background that we now fear for his safety. On the New Year's Eve, one of his friends arrived up and invited him to a party in the Fountain Bar in Castlewellan. He went along to that party. The following day, the same gentleman that took him from Bransford to the social evening in Castlewellan arrived at 1:30 in the day. They were short of potatoes and milk, and Eugene took the key of the house in Bransford, for there was a supply of milk and potatoes in Bransford, and they went off to get the milk and potatoes. It was a cold evening, and Eugene left wearing his new shoes, good suit trousers, pullover and shirt, no jacket. When I say no jacket, I mean he was dressed, shirt, pullover, trousers, new shoes. That was his clothing. That is the last that his wife has seen or heard of Eugene. I have got more or less a blank. Plenty of rumour in the neighbourhood, plenty of gossip, plenty of idle talk, but the facts are, we as his parents are left with 2 orphaned youngsters, 1 3-year-old and the other 4. His little boy from the first marriage is with the first wife's people. His second wife is with her parents, residing in Downpatrick, with a newborn baby. Doesn't know what way to turn. He has an insurance policy on himself with the Irish Life. His bank account in the local bank is now run out, and I'm paying now £12 to £15 per month to keep his bank account viable in the interest of his children, because there is money involved here. If in the event of him being dead or deceased, as I should say, if we can locate a body, then his youngsters would have some form of compensation and insurance coverage. Without that, we would be in some difficulties. I have every reason to believe that he is deceased, and I am appealing directly to the people who assassinated or killed him to at least have the decency to let us have his body forthwith in the interests of his youngsters. I will not be a beneficiary to any money forthcoming. The policy is clearly made out to his youngsters. I never could have anticipated this happening in our home or in this part of County Down. But unlike so many parents throughout the length and breadth of Northern Ireland today, this young lad has obviously been caught up in a violent situation, though thank God there wasn't a lot of violence around our area. There's areas that has been worse, but we're only one of the thousands that are affected by this evil, by this cancer in our midst. And I would appeal to parents to know where your youngsters are at night, social evenings, etc. Know where they are, because I would not want anyone to be saddled or in the same situation as we find ourselves at this time. The boys that used to come to the door looking for him to go here, there, and everywhere, places where possibly we never knew he was, they no longer knock. They no longer want to see me. And those people who I have asked in good faith for confidential information have 9 times out of 10 given me a complete blank or an evasive answer. But the facts are, knowing Eugene as I knew him as his father, he never, number one, would have walked out on his new wife, second wife. He never would have walked out on the youngsters of his first marriage and left them, two with us and a little boy, Tony, in Belfast. And against that background, I am once again asking for his body. As far as we are concerned here, my wife has undergone two major operations in coming to the end of 1980 and returned from a hospital bed here for to do her best to try and rear these kids and bring them up. And everything seemed to be going well. Eugene got married again and was settled down. And then on the 1st of January, this horrible thing should happen. It has had a terrible effect right across our whole family life. And when we would go out on social evenings, very often our evenings would be ruined by people who would have known that Eugene had gone. They would be making inquiries, and that caused my wife a lot of annoyance. Glad to hear if the inquiry has been made, but we never were able to get any useful information. It was just, how are you, Mrs. Simons, any word of Eugene? And that would really start my wife to get tensed up, and it was a never-ending serial. It has had a tremendous effect on the rest of our family, and at least we would appreciate anyone that would be in a position to give us any worthwhile information or news regarding his whereabouts. Eventually, we'll have to get over this. There's thousands upon thousands of other families in Northern Ireland who have been bereaved in one way or another through this terrible sequence of events. The only thing I never thought that it could happen to us, I thought this part of County Down, at least, that it wouldn't happen to me, but no one knows who rears a family today in Northern Ireland, what's going to arrive at their doorstep. Anywhere else I have made inquiries, and God knows I have made inquiries over the length and breadth of the country. I have made inquiries in Limerick. I spent part of a summer holiday in Limerick. I have spent summer holiday in Ballinall. I've spent part of my holiday in Donegal. I have been around. I have asked people, and I'm sure, quite sure, there's quite a number of people that I have been in contact with who would not want their name divulged. And people like that I have good respect for, and I would not want to divulge their names. But I have made exhaustive inquiries and still doing so. The boys that used to come to the door looking for him especially, they have been most evasive. And I have had good reason to believe that they know a lot, but they're afraid for one reason or another to come clean. These two little girls, Una is at school now, 4 years of age, and Pauline is at play school. I am now 55 years of age, and possibly I'll see them, with a bit of luck, well on their way before my day would come. If it works in reverse, and I am called for some reason or other before 70, then so be it. I will have to depend on other members of my family to step into the breach that I have left. But it's my intention to rear those kids.
That recording was made for this documentary some time ago, but because of the family's need for news of Eugene, that appeal by his father was broadcast just before Christmas. Like Walter Simons, we hoped it might jog somebody's conscience somewhere, and that Walter Simons might get some word about his son. However, the Simons family has still heard nothing, and their wait continues. On the surface, there appears to be some differences between this case and the other three cases in Crossmaglen. Eugene came from a relatively quiet town, unaccustomed to violence. Eugene was not alone when he disappeared. Eugene may well have been involved with some paramilitary group. Despite these differences, there are marked similarities between the cases of Jerry Evans, Charlie Armstrong, Sean Murphy, and Eugene Simons.
Well, essentially, they follow a pretty similar pattern. In the case of the three people, Jerry Evans, Charles Armstrong, and Sean Murphy from the Crossmaglen area, they were all travelling on their own. They all disappeared without trace, without any sign of their whereabouts. There has been no indication from any source of acceptance of responsibility for their disappearance. In the case of young Simons, he just disappeared about a year ago today. Now, one would imagine that in the normal course of events, whether the involvement was of a British Army type, of a paramilitary type, or even if there was just an ordinary criminal conspiracy abroad, that there would be some evidence as to what has happened. Those who say that they disappeared, that they've lost their memory, etc., have to take into account the fact that if it's said about one person, it may well be true, and it may be that one of the four people involved is suffering from amnesia. If you say that all four are suffering from amnesia, then what you're doing is stretching the bounds of credibility to a ludicrous extent and entering into a state of mind that really is quite imbalanced. What one must say is that the four disappearances stretch the bounds of credibility and enter the realm of conspiracy.
If there has been a conspiracy, it would not be surprising that it should have occurred in Crossmaglen. At the main Dundalk Armagh crossroads, where you turn off to drive the last few miles to Crossmaglen, there's a small shrine. Unlike hundreds of shrines throughout the country, this one is not there to mark any local saint. Underneath a large tricolour, a mural bears the inscription, "My brother is not a criminal." And on the roadside, there are 10 white crosses, one for each of the hunger strikers that died last year. From there to Crossmaglen, the drive through the Slievegullion Mountains is marked by black flags, tricolours, and Republican slogans. In the town itself, even the concrete bollards are painted green, white, and gold.
This area might have more heightened tension from time to time than other areas. It may have seen as many deaths as any comparative rural area, and with the exception of Belfast, probably has seen more deaths than most other areas. There has been a high level of violence for a long period of time. But to say that it's an exceptional area would be to distort the facts. That makes it all the more peculiar that these people have gone missing.
Whether or not Crossmaglen is an exceptional area in terms of society in the North is open to question. What cannot be questioned is that it's a scared society, upset by the long and bloody history of violence in the area, and now petrified by the growing number of disappearances in the region. Jerry Evans disappeared March 1979. No trace, no clue, no word. Charlie Armstrong disappeared August 1981. No trace, No clue. No word. And Sean Murphy disappeared December 1981. No trace. No clue. No word. Local GP Dr. O'Fee is alarmed by the effect these disappearances have had on the families involved and on the whole community of Crossmaglen.
Well, of course, the waiting is the most terrible part of this. Every phone call and every knock on the door brings hope, which is dashed when nobody is coming to tell them what has happened to their loved ones. I think probably the frustration involved in the immediate families and the nervous upset that accompanies this is the chief thing. In medical terms, of course, there's always the possibility of relatives or close acquaintances going into states of acute anxiety, depression, certainly tension headaches, and these things that we see in the surgery. It definitely has the effect of increasing the number of psychological ailments that doctors see in the surgeries. Fear is probably the predominant feature. We see many more cases of anxiety, especially amongst young parents who are always worried when their adolescent boys especially are out, worried that they'll get some message that something has happened to them, or if they don't come home in time, they're watching the clock, wondering why. Anxiety neuroses are much more common. People think that they require sedatives and tranquilizers, when, of course, that isn't the proper treatment. If it could be meted out to them, the proper treatment would be to spend an hour talking with most of them. But this is simply impossible with the number of psychological ailments we come up against. And I would like to appeal to anyone who may have any information about the people who have disappeared to please let the relatives know, because even if it is to say that they are no longer alive, I know from personal experience that the relatives would wish to get some definite information. In my opinion, not alone are these disappearances combined with the troubles in the area having a deleterious effect on the immediate families, but are also making this area a much more unhappy place to live in than it always has been.
The whole community of Crossmaglen is shocked by the disappearance of these three men and worried that the area may be hit by even more disappearances. Local curate Father Morn knows very well the desperate effect that these disappearances have had.
I am completely mystified as to why these have happened. Perhaps if it individualised, the Armstrong chase is completely baffling because he's a very much a home person, attached to his family, attached to the local community and involved in everything locally. And it amazes me that three people could disappear without being seen or without any trace left behind of them. As for the community at large, they are mystified also, and they are sympathetic towards the tragedy that these families are asked to bear. I suppose on the surface it appears life is almost as normal as, or as normal as it can be, but deep down there are a number of precautions people almost automatically take with regard to opening door to strange knocks, to see strange cars parked the streets, to notice strange individuals knocking around. All this they treat warily, to put it mildly. If any of them are dead, it would help very much if the families were told about it, because it would end their period of suspense, and perhaps more importantly, a funeral can provide a tremendous therapy for a family in its bereavement.
One person who knows exactly how important it is to get the body back and have a funeral service is Renata Niedermayer, daughter of German businessman Thomas Niedermayer, whose body was finally recovered nearly 7 years after he was kidnapped from his home in Belfast. For all that time, the Niedermayer family waited for confirmation of what they feared and knew to be true, but had no proof of, that their father was dead. In the long history of trouble in Northern Ireland, the Niedermayer case dragged on longer than any other. The wait for the family was a very long wait, and the relief when it was all over was immense.
My father was fine. It all happened very, very fast. I was just telephoned one morning at work by the police saying that could I please come to the station. They weren't going to tell me what it was over the phone. It was a fairly good idea. So I arrived down and they were very kind. They explained what the situation was to me. And I waited around until it was confirmed that it was my father's body that had been found. But curiously enough, actually, as a crow flies, it was about a mile from our house. And I had passed the spot many, many, many times. It was rather ironic to think he'd been there all the time. It was, in fact, under a rubbish tip, which I was quite fond of that. I mean, they could have chosen somewhere else that wasn't as gory as that. My mother was relieved whenever she heard. She was very distressed, I think, at where he was found again, under a rubbish tip in a very shallow grave. It did disturb her. But she was very, very relieved that he'd been found. We were called again to the police station to identify the clothing, which we in due course did. And then I think it was a few days after that my father's funeral took place. It happened very, very quickly, and I don't think any of us really had time to think, what with within days of the body being found, there were funeral arrangements to make. I mean, after 7 years, you don't think of things like that. So in due time, he was buried, and as my father's coffin was being lowered into the grave, she took a rose from her wreath and threw it under the coffin. And she was in a complete and absolute daze at that stage. It took a great deal out of her. I left early, as I say, immediately after that. And a friend drove me home. And then I went home to my own cottage. And I was fine. 2 days after that, I was, at least immediately after that, I did all the things I usually have to. So it was 2 days after that, for the life of me, I couldn't get up. It seemed as though I didn't have a bit of strength in me, so I stayed in bed all day. But the next day, it all passed, and I was all right. And my mother, she was staying with friends. My sister had come over for the funeral. And it was like a big sigh of relief. It's all over, and thank goodness it is now.
It seems that even a dead body and a Christian burial can provide some comfort and relief. Thomas Niedermayer was missing for 7 years before he was found dead. For the families of Jerry Evans, Charlie Armstrong, Sean Murphy and Eugene Simons, the wait continues. For all of them, it's been a long wait. Can anyone, anywhere, help these families?
Well, it's gone on so long now that I'd like to know one way or the other. But please, God, let it be good news.
Well, I think that at this stage we'd like to know one way or another. But Maureen and myself and the rest of the family, we'd like to know one way or another what has happened to him. And let him be alive or dead, we would like to know.